Good morning and welcome to Up to Date. Steve Kraske is off today. I'm Brian Ellison. It's true of Kansas City and many American cities. There's a large building, well-crafted, architecturally significant, locally prominent, and mostly a mystery to most residents. The Scottish Rite Masonic Temple at the corner of Linwood and Paseo occupies that place here in our fair city. We'll try to unravel a little of that mystery today as we explore how it came to be and what goes on in there and what the future of that space and others like it around the country may be. Later, we'll look at baby boomers. They're sometimes called the sandwich generation, but are they getting squeezed too much? We'll look at why this generation has the highest suicide rate of any age group. But first, Masonic temples. We're joined in the studio this morning by Bob Harmon. He's personal representative of the SGIG Valley of Kansas City, and I'll have him tell us what that means here in a minute. He really runs the Scottish Rite Temple in Kansas City. Bob, good morning.
Good morning.
And also Elizabeth Rosen. She's principal and owner at Rosen Preservation here in Kansas City. She specializes in restoring and preserving historic buildings. Elizabeth, welcome to you.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
I also want to go across the country to put some of this in context. In fact, we'll start there with Dr. William Moore. He's an associate professor of American material culture at Boston University, and he's joining us from his office this morning. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
Let me ask you first, what does a professor of American material culture study anyway?
You caught me a little bit off guard there. What I study is stuff, things. So much of American history has been written by looking at documents, printed material, letters, diaries. And the reality is that in American history, only a small minority of people leave diaries or have letters that make it into the archives. So through material culture, we look at the things that people use, the landscapes that they've created, the buildings that they've erected, to see what these documents, these material documents, can tell us about the American past and can tell us about how people lived and what they thought. So again, American material culture is looking at the past, but using things other than documents.
Well, great. That'll help us a lot as we talk about the Scottish Rite Temple here in Kansas City today. Let me ask you first to just sort of put this Masonic structure, this temple, in context. Are there a lot of Masonic temples all over the U.S.? Are they all over the world?
Well, they're all over the world, but specifically they're all over the United States. And between 1870 and 1930, every American community had at least one Masonic building in it. And I define a Masonic building as a structure that holds a space in which Masons met to perform their initiatory rituals. And also, the larger cities, cities that were somewhat bigger than just a small town. Every small town had a lodge room, but bigger cities would have multiple buildings that would hold not just lodge rooms for Masonic lodges, but in the great period of American fraternalism, there were multiple Masonic organizations. So there was the Lodge, there was a group called the Knights Temple Commandery, there was the Scottish Rite that we're talking about today, there was the Shrine, and each of these groups had specific needs, specific spatial needs for transforming men from their workaday world into their fraternal identity. So each of these groups had different spatial needs, so they ended up having different rooms to perform their rituals, so that the biggest cities like Kansas City would have a Shriner's Mosque, would have a Scottish Rite Cathedral, would have multiple buildings that had lodge rooms that held the local Masonic Lodge.
And so in your work, you talk about how buildings convey meaning and identity. What is the identity that we're talking about here? What did these buildings convey about who the Masons were at that point in American history?
Well, the big issue here is that the period of these temple buildings was 1870 to 1930, which was a period in which American society radically transformed from being a rural country to being an urban country, from being based in an agricultural economy to being based in manufacturing. And as the world changed, men in particular found themselves kind of at a loss for who they were supposed to be. Everything in their world was changing, and what did it mean to be a man in the new industrial world? And Freemasonry provided men with specific rules, specific ideas about how men were supposed to behave. And so I've identified four of them. The first one is the Masonic Lodge was about being a builder, being a craftsman, being an artisan. The Knights Templar Commandery that I mentioned earlier was about being a warrior, and specifically a righteous religious warrior, a descendant of the men who fought in the Crusades. The Scottish Rite was about being a wise man and, you know, being an inheritor of the wisdom of the ages. And the Shrine was about showing that you could have a good time. And it was the last of the four organizations and really took off as the 20th century took off. And instead of having the 19th century idea of masculinity based on character, it was a 20th century identity of masculinity based on personality, being a good fellow.
So it sounds like we can't really speak of a single Masonic architecture as a genre, that we're really talking about a whole bunch of different kinds of buildings used for different purposes, even by different groups.
That's right, but with overlapping memberships. Because to be in any of those other organizations that we are talking about, the Shrine or the Scottish Rite or the Commandery, you also needed to maintain your membership in the Lodge. So what I've argued is that the fraternity gave men really a group of identities that they could pull upon in different cases, in different situations in their lives.
That's Will Moore. He's a professor at Boston University. And Will, I hope you'll keep jumping in here as our conversation continues. But let me turn to our local guest to sort of put that national picture into local application. Bob Harmon, you run the Scottish Rite Temple here. And maybe you could fill us in on that title that we gave for you at the top of the show, Personal Representative of the SGIG Valley of Kansas City. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. The Scottish Rite is ruled, or governed rather, nationally by what we call a Supreme Council. And members of the Supreme Council are Sovereign Grand Inspector Generals.
SGIG.
SGIGs.
All right.
Each SGIG is in charge of a state in the United States that we call an Orient. And in the Orient of Missouri, we have a SGIG. And in the Orient of Missouri, we have five valleys, Kansas City, St. Joe, Columbia, St. Louis, and Joplin. And each of those five valleys, the SGIG appoints his personal representative to have his powers. So it's a lot easier to say chief officer, but SGIG's personal representative is the official title.
Very good. Thank you for clearing that up. And of course, actually, those titles and those various words are part of what makes the Masonic movement or Freemasonry somewhat confusing or mysterious to people. Give us some background on how it came here to Kansas City. When did it first show up around here?
Scottish Rite came to Kansas City in the 1880s. It actually had a couple of different attempts. The first chartering faltered and failed, and then it happened again. So at about 1888, it took hold and never left.
And the building that we're talking about today, the building at the corner of Linwood and Paseo, was not built during this golden era that Will Moore talked about, right?
It was.
Okay.
It was.
When was it completed?
In exactly the time that Will's talking about. Our current Scottish Rite Temple, as we call it, the ground was broken in 1928, the cornerstone was laid in 1929, and it was dedicated in 1930.
All right, so right at the tail end of that period he was talking about.
Right at it. Interestingly, we had built, our Valley of Scottish Rite had built a building that is still standing today, and it is at what was 15th and Troost, Truman Road and Troost. That building is a church today, and it's identified by four white panels over the front door, which were originally held four gorgeous stained glass windows that are in our building today. But that building was built in about 1903, and immediately when they built it, they realized they didn't build it big enough, and they didn't build it for something that was coming to be acceptable, especially in Kansas City at that time, which was public dancing and parties. So the members, almost about the time that building at 15th and Troost was built, realized we need another building and we need to have it for social functions. And so the temple at Linwood and Paseo was planned for the purposes, like Will described, of initiation and the presentation of Scottish Rite degrees, but also in a very major way to be a social center which our building is suited for perfectly.
It's an enormous building. How did it come to be built, even at a time when the economy was starting to maybe head a different direction there in the late 1920s?
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by what the signs would have been economically in the mid-20s, because the membership appointed a building committee who committed about $1 million budget for building the building in, you know, 1925 or so. And they said in writing in articles that they wouldn't break ground until they had that $1 million, and about $350,000 into fundraising, they couldn't help themselves, and they went ahead and broke ground and took out a mortgage. So when the building was dedicated in 1930, we had just had a stock market crash. People couldn't afford to be members anymore, and in 1939, the Scottish Rite in Kansas City actually lost the building. The mortgage was foreclosed on.
But got it back at some point.
Well, 1946, right after World War II, the American Legion's membership was exploding in this country and in Kansas City. And the American Legion bought the building. And many older generations, my grandparents and my parents, for example, knew our temple as the World War II Memorial Building in Kansas City, because the American Legion had it for quite a long time.
All right.
About 1959, 1960, the American Legion's interest in the building petered out, and I don't know why they left, but they left, and the building sat vacant for a while. Our organization had had a couple of different homes and lodge buildings, and it actually restored the Jewish Community Center just a few blocks east on Linwood, which is now a Kansas City multipurpose center. But right about the time they got that done, our building either came back on the market or the price was reduced to what I hear was $100,000. And as I put it, they couldn't help themselves, and they bought it back.
That was a pretty big bargain. Elizabeth Rosen, you know a lot about the buildings, the historic buildings of Kansas City. You've worked on preserving or repurposing many of them. How does this building fit in to that broader context of buildings in that part of town built in that period of the city's history?
Linwood is an incredible corridor of institutional buildings. There are so many religious buildings along there from that same period of time, from the early 20th century, many of which have found new uses, either, as Bob said, the Linwood, the Mohart Multipurpose Center, which was the old Temple B'nai Yehuda and the Jewish Community Center. There's the little Greek Orthodox church that's there as well. There are several others that are well known. So it really fit into the dynamic of this streetcar line, streetcar road, which had good access, good transportation access for people from all over the city. It was really a ripe corner for that type of development.
Of course, the streetcar may, in fact, go right down that corridor.
It very well may.
What happened? I mean, remind us of the history. That is not quite the kind of neighborhood it became a few decades later.
After World War II, you start to see the proliferation of new suburban development on the fringes, both in Kansas City proper and also in Johnson County and further out in Jackson County. And as people moved from the older neighborhoods out to the new development, you saw a changing dynamic in the neighborhood and a drop in population, and a lot of these organizations lost their original memberships. Many of them rebuilt in new locations further out from the central city.
That's Elizabeth Rosen. She's principal and owner at Rosen Preservation. We're also talking with Bob Harmon. He runs the Scottish Rite Temple here in Kansas City. I want to hear from you today on Up to Date. What do you know or want to know about the Masonic Scottish Rite Temple here and or others elsewhere? What do you love about them? What do you find strange? What do you want to know? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also tweet at KCUR Up to Date. We're checking our email today, too, at updatedate@kcur.org. Let's talk a little bit about what does go on inside the temple. I think that's a mystery to some folks, but to read your website, Bob, it's not really intended to be such a mystery, right?
No, it's not at all. There are a lot of phrases that describe the Masonic fraternity, and we're not a secret organization, but we do have secrets. Because it is initiatory, and you know, to be a member, you have to experience those things. The Masonic Lodge has 3 degrees, and as Will described, you know, those 3 degrees are complete. Scottish Rite was developed in the 1700s when there are following degrees. There are more stories and lessons for a man to learn. And as those degrees were coordinated, if you will, consolidated, the actual Scottish phraseology comes from the relationship of Bonnie Prince Charlie, who was exiled in Europe, and his cousins were all kings in Europe, and they were all Masons, and they kind of started the extra, the following degrees. And in 1802, Scottish Rite was developed in Charleston, South Carolina, and these 29 additional degrees were more formalized. And so what we really do in the building is we take Masons who want to learn more, and we present the degrees in the form of plays.
Hmm.
So we have full props and costume and backdrops, and we present these life lessons in religious degrees or in philosophical degrees in an understandable way that a candidate can understand by seeing them presented. And so you have something for the members to do by acting or participating. You have this big auditorium, and that's really what we do. And the other primary thing that we do is we have a relationship here in Kansas City with Children's Mercy Hospital, and we have a childhood language development clinic, speech and hearing clinic in our building.
For those who haven't been inside the building, from the outside, it looks very imposing. There are not many windows, but you walk in the door, and it's actually a lot of big open space, including mm-hmm. a very large auditorium, mm-hmm. which you're talking about. There's also some rooms for rituals. Is that right?
Most of our ritual in Scottish Rite goes on in the auditorium, but there's a lot of class work, and we explain things to people that are joining, and you can get a lot of this information at srkc.org, our website, and there's links there to the Supreme Council and so forth. So it's not really a mystery.
And we'll put a link to that on our website as well, kcur.org. There's pictures of almost every room mm-hmm. in the building at that website. Will, you were going to jump in there.
Yeah, can I duck in here a minute?
Please.
And just put a little bit of historical perspective on the theater and the ritual space, which the amazing thing about the Scottish Rite is that it is presenting these stories which are very old and which are based on reality. I'm sorry, I don't know if you heard that beep, but that are based in a very old biblical reality. And yet, when they were being presented at the beginning of the 20th century, they were being produced in the absolute most modern fashion, where they were using all of the modern technologies that were available to them at that time, including electrical lighting and including trompe l'oeil or fool the eye scenic backdrops. So they were producing these rituals in a spectacular style that was cutting art entertainment of the time, almost kind of what we would think of as virtual reality, so that men would come in and be initiated and would take part in, either as actors or as an audience for viewing these spectacular scenic backdrops. And that's one of the things that's wonderful about Scottish Rite cathedrals all across the country, is that in these theaters they have preserved century-old scenic backdrops, sometimes even 140-year-old scenic backdrops, so that theatrical scenery is extremely ephemeral. After a show closes, they throw it out. But here, in these old buildings, you have these time capsules of what Victorian scenic design looked like.
And I've seen some of the backdrops on display on your website as well, because mm-hmm. you make them available for those who want to use the building for things like weddings as well, right?
Oh, yes. We have quite a few very grand weddings with different scenic settings.
Well, we're going to talk more about the uses of the building, past and present and future. We're going to talk more about ways that buildings like the Masonic Temple here in Kansas City are being used now, and sometimes for purposes other than being Masonic temples. We'll continue our conversation about the history and the future of the Scottish Rite Temple in Kansas City, as well as our look at suicide rates among baby boomers. That's all coming up in the second half of Up to Date. If you want to join the conversation, maybe you've been inside the Scottish Rite here in Kansas City, tell us what struck you about it. Call us at 816-235-2888. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to the second half of Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. Today we are talking about the history as well as the future of the Scottish Rite Temple here in Kansas City and other Masonic buildings here and around the country. We're joined this morning by phone by Dr. William Moore at Boston University. Also here in the studio are Bob Harmon. He runs the Scottish Rite Temple as the personal representative of the SGIG Valley of Kansas City, and also Elizabeth Rosen. She's principal and owner at Rosen Preservation. You can join the conversation too at 816-235-2888. We've got a full board of calls right now. I want to take some of your questions. Let's start with Florence. She's calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Florence, good morning.
Good morning. I would like this question for Will, Will from the university.
Yeah.
I would like to ask Mr. Will, would he share a brief history of the, from ancient times, of the building that modern-day Freemasonry is based on, something about the original, from ancient times, Freemasonry conception. Why is it referred to as a temple when the dictionary shares a temple is one dedicated to a deity or deities? That's it.
Good question, Florence. I appreciate your call. Will Moore from Boston University, you must have answered this question before. Why do they call them temples?
Well, they call them temples because the Masons, in their ritual, they play the role of the builders of Solomon's Temple in ancient Israel, the religious structure on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem. And this is the conceit that the Masons have. This is the role that they play. And throughout much of the 19th century, the Masons firmly believed that they actually were the descendants of the builders of Solomon's Temple. In historical actuality, it's an idea that came down to Freemasonry through the guilds of stonemasons that were building the cathedrals in the medieval period, and they had rituals in which they taught each other trade secrets, and they started to see themselves as the descendants of the builders of Solomon's Temple. And then during the Enlightenment, you started to have gentlemen, men who didn't need to work for a living, wanting to join those organizations to get the kind of the knowledge of geometry, of the craft of building. So those gentlemen took on this role of being builders and took on the ritual of thinking that they were descendants of the builders of Solomon's Temple. So that whole idea of architecture and of virtue expressed architecturally is at the center of the Masonic identity, and that's why it's still called a temple.
Will, is there an architectural connection between the Kansas City Scottish Rite Temple and earlier structures? Are there ancient structures that have a connection with this building?
Yeah, there are. The real central building that this one is based upon is John Russell Pope's House of the Temple, which was built in the 19-teens in Washington, D.C., as the home of the southern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite. And John Russell Pope was a very prominent American architect who had been trained at the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris. And at that time in Paris, when they were training architects, they were building upon classical roots. So the House of the Temple in Washington is supposed to represent the mausoleum of Halicarnassus in Turkey. So one of the monuments of Greek architecture. So Pope based his design, which if you go to Washington, you really should tour this building. It's on view. The Scottish Rite Masons have made it open to you. It's just a spectacular ceremonial space that John Russell Pope built, and which influenced all the Masonic temples, particularly all the Scottish Rite temples which followed it. So the architects that built the temple in Kansas City were looking at the House of the Temple in Washington when they built their building. And again, John Russell Pope was looking at the classical precedent in Turkey when right. He built the House of the Temple.
You know, I've seen the Washington Temple you're talking about only from the outside, and it is striking the similarities from the outside. I saw the pictures on both websites for the two buildings, and those are pretty strikingly similar too. The Washington one's larger, perhaps, but there are some real similarities. I'm curious, Elizabeth, as a person who's seen a lot of these historic buildings, what strikes you most about the temple here in Kansas City?
It's really its grandeur and its formality. I think, as Will said, you know, it was built during a period when there was a lot of emphasis on tradition and still on the European tradition, the formality. It was a legacy that came out of the 1893 Chicago World's Fair and the City Beautiful movement. It's a quintessential Beaux-Arts building. It could be a government building, an institutional building, as easily as it is the Shriners Temple or the Scottish Rite Temple.
Well, and I wonder, is that a lot of these historic Masonic buildings have a great similarity to government buildings of the same period? Does that say something about the role that Masons have had historically in the United States? Bob?
Not to my knowledge.
No?
No.
Will, what do you think?
Well, what I would say is that the Masons believed themselves to be the carriers of Americanism. Masons are frequently telling us that George Washington was a Mason and that many of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were Masons. And that's all exactly true. And Freemasonry was central in spreading Enlightenment ideas through the new continent and having people think about self-government and virtue. But as they were building these buildings throughout this time period, the Masons saw themselves as being kind of the backbone of American society. And they wanted these buildings that spoke to people of unchanging values. And they wanted to build buildings that said that the fraternity is going to be here no matter what happens, right? And so that these buildings are built to look as though they came down from the ages. And they're supposed to speak to people of being solid and of being in the establishment. And that's exactly what part of the problem with Masonic membership in the second half of the 20th century was, is that as the Vietnam War went on and as the civil rights movement pushed people to think about what does the establishment stand for and do you want to be part of the establishment, these buildings drove people away, drove young men away during the 1960s, just as they had attracted young men in the 1920s.
Interesting. We will talk a little bit here about how the membership of Masonic groups has changed and, in fact, decreased over the years. But I want to talk about another building in Kansas City. And, in fact, I think Brad is on the line from Prairie Village with a question about that. Brad, good morning.
Hello. I was wondering about the Lyric Theater and its history.
Yeah, I appreciate your call. Brad, what do you know about the Lyric Theater's history?
Very little other than what you see in the program when I used to go to the symphony down there.
Yeah, Will, I understand Lyric was once a Masonic building itself.
Yeah. Earlier on we were talking about, Bob was talking about the way that the Scottish Rite Temple was built too big and they expended too much money on it and then it was lost. And that's a very standard pattern in American Masonic buildings, particularly at the very end of the 1920s, that there'd been generations where the membership had always been getting bigger, and they kept building bigger buildings until suddenly the world changed with the Great Depression and buildings were lost. And that's what happened with the Lyric Theater as well, that it was the building built by the Kansas City Shriners. And again, they finished it just before the Depression struck. They built it bigger than maybe they should have, although it's hard to fault them since all over the country the news was build bigger so you don't outgrow the building right away. And so it was lost and has gone through a number of hands before becoming the Lyric Theater. But the primary marker that you can see that it was the Shriners Mosque is the pharaonic masks on the facade. As you go in the front door.
Kind of an Egyptian theme.
Right. Egyptoid. Because the Shriners Mosques were, because of the motif of the Shriners, trying to pretend to be a Middle Eastern organization. The buildings were always built in an Egyptoid fashion or in a neo-Islamic fashion, a Moorish fashion. So the Lyric Theater is a little bit off of the mainstream of Shriners mosques in that it's this neoclassical building, but it still has those signature pharaoh's masks to portray the Egyptian aspect.
Bob Harmon, we've been talking a lot about the past of this building and its glory days, if you will. Still a lot goes on in the building today, doesn't it?
We have activities and functions. We try to support the community. For example, for the past 3 years, we've hosted the Heart of America Veterans Stand Down at our building, inside and out, and served quite a few veterans. We've had a lot of activities. The Kansas City Free Clinic just had their Bloom Party this past April, which was a great success for them, and we enjoyed hosting that. And we've had a lot of college and high school graduations and typical uses for the auditorium. There have been a lot of weddings, and we're certainly open to people and organizations that want to come and ask us about using a really unique facility.
So the building was built for $1 million back in 1928 or something. Mm-hmm. I've seen that somewhere. That would be something like $14 million today. Is there any idea what the building is worth today?
No. It's a pretty prominent location, center of Kansas City,
right.
all of the mile markers around the world point to that intersection of Linwood and Paseo. But other than that, as far as what the building is worth, I don't know. What it costs to operate it, I do, unfortunately.
And it's a lot, I guess.
It's a lot. It's really more than we can afford right now. And so we've invested money. We have a foundation that works diligently to raise funds. And for example, we just upgraded the passenger elevator inside the building, originally the American Legion had put that two elevators in the building at a cost of $17,000. We just upgraded our passenger elevator for $100,000.
Wow. The whole building was bought for in the 50s.
Yeah, it's drastically different.
Elizabeth Rosen, the Masons, the Scottish Rite here in Kansas City is not alone in having big old buildings as their most valuable possessions. A lot of those buildings end up serving other purposes. They need to become something else in order for the groups that own them to survive. What kinds of purposes have big old buildings in Kansas City been put to that were similar or different from their original intent?
It is a big old building, and this is the type of building that can become a white elephant in communities across the country. In Kansas City, think of the Main Street Theater that was recently rehabbed, now the Alamo Draft House, which sat empty for 20, 30 years. That they were able ultimately to reclaim it for its original purpose, but it took a long time to get to that point. Another one would be the cold storage building down in City Market, where it had outlived its original life, its original use, and was repurposed for apartments. So those are two really good examples. The Lyric is a great example of another building that really needs to find a new use.
It has to be repurposed again.
It needs to be repurposed again, exactly.
Well, I can see how the cold storage building became loft apartments. I can see how a warehouse becomes something like that. Help me think through what a building like the Scottish Rite Temple could conceivably be. And I know we're not making very specific plans here, but how do you go about thinking through that kind of project?
You need to look at the building itself. What are its key features? Every building is going to be different, both on the outside. What elements do you have to work with? What are going to pose challenges? And then on the inside as well, there's this signature auditorium, which is really a key space. It's the key public access point to the building, and that would need to be addressed sensitively in a rehabilitation. You're going to have secondary spaces around that may have a variety of historic fabric that would lend themselves to new uses more easily. But you're going to be left with that big auditorium space. It's also a huge footprint. Even if you were to add windows on the perimeter walls, it's a very deep building. And so you'd need to think about uses that may or may not need that external light and air.
You know, I'm curious, Bob, just as you've talked about the reasons this building was built. It was a social place. It was a meeting place. It was for getting groups of people together to connect and to have some sort of ritual, some sort of relationship that developed. What are the Masonic temples of today? If it's not going to be a facility like this enormous Scottish Rite temple, where do you think people are connecting today? Or where would an organization like yours want to make a home today?
Well, I think the connections can be made in a smaller space. We have a really good example of that in Missouri. The Valley of Columbia built a new building, which is much smaller, multi-purpose, large room in the middle where they can have they can bring in the material they need to present the degrees, but it's also a meeting hall and so forth. It's just a much smaller, more modern space. The more modern space is easier to maintain. The plumbing, mm-hmm. the electrical, and everything are more modern. And while we have many upgrades like that, we've upgraded our electronic lighting system, and we have added air conditioning, which, you know, really makes a difference. It's still so large that our membership really has a hard time filling it. So where would we meet? Well, we could meet in a tent and really have an okay experience. But our resistance, of course, our membership's natural resistance is that lack of grandeur and that lack of presence.
Mm-hmm. Existing membership, not existing, potential new membership.
But. Yeah, but you know, it can be done, and it has been done even in the state of Missouri.
Will Moore, are new Masonic temples being constructed really anywhere today?
No. I mean, there are. It's infrequent. But I would like to step in and just talk about adaptive reuse of Masonic temples.
Quickly, if you would, Will.
Okay. Just that there are lots of different models. And in the most successful ones, you have the organization continue to use the space but find another use as well. So the most best example of this is the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles, where they put on the Oscars there, but it's still a Shrine Auditorium. And then the farthest end of that is when they just keep the facade and completely gut the interior, which is what happened in Chicago with the Medina Temple in Chicago, which is now a Bloomingdale's home and furniture store.
Wow.
But in between there, you've got also the Mecca Temple Mosque in New York City, which is now the city center and a center of a dance performance. And in Richmond, you've got the Arthur Ashe Performance Center, which used to be the Shriners Mosque in Richmond as well. But as far as the question of our Masonic temples being built these days, the buildings that were built in the great building period are still being used all across the country. And then there's also a new model that's moving towards back to what was going on before the temples were being built, which is that Masonic organizations are now starting to rent their space and not feeling that they need to have dedicated spaces for their rituals, so they can come in and do the rituals when they need them and then not have to maintain the building when they don't need them.
Kind of the opposite of the model of having the space and renting it out, becoming the renters. Last question then for you, Bob Harmon. If someone wants to see the inside of the Scottish Rite Temple or wants to maybe even use it themselves, what do they need to do?
We are our offices are open Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday every week. They can just stop by, or they can call our office at 561-2277.
And we'll put the link up to the Scottish Rite Kansas City website on our website, which is kcur.org. I want to say thanks to our guest today, Dr. Will Moore from Boston University, a associate professor of American material culture. Bob Harmon, he's the personal representative of the SGIG Valley of Kansas City. And Elizabeth Rosen, she's principal at Rosen Preservation. Thanks to all of you for being here today.